Good evening, good evening. Welcome to the broadcast where we are promoting a conversation on race in America. The aim of this weekly program is to provoke a conversation on race in America. I firmly believe that our great nation is going through a very difficult time, and the cause of it goes beyond economics and politics. It is unfortunate, but politics and economics often fuel or stoke the flames that cause widespread pessimism and frustration. However, I believe that our nation is suffering from the same thing that most relationships suffer from, and that is a lack of communication. There are some things that we really need to talk about on a national level. At the top of the list is race relations. I want to acknowledge the sponsor of today's broadcast, the Winfield Funeral Home, located at 3701 Hollywood Avenue. They have three at-need funeral packages, starting with the Apollo package. It includes a 20-gauge steel casket for only $33.95. It includes the professional services of a funeral director and staff, transfer of your loved one to a funeral home, embalming, other preparation, the funeral service, the hearse, and one limo. For details, call 631-0203 and ask for the general manager, Mrs. Ozell G. Woodson, Winfield Funeral Home, celebrating life with dignity affordably. You can send me your comments by going to my website, www.hcora.com. I have in the studio with me a civil rights icon in the state of Louisiana, Dr. Harry Blake, Vice President of the National Baptist Convention USA Incorporated and pastor of the Mount Canaan Baptist Church of Shreveport. Welcome to the broadcast, Dr. Blake.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me.
Amen. Our topic today is a generation who has not known segregation and the implications of that in terms of the community. So in the way of a little background here, I spent the first 12 and a half years of my life living in a segregated society in northeast Louisiana. I rode the school bus 18 miles each way to school and back. During that time, I spent many of those years living about 200 yards from an elementary school that I was told was a white school. And by the way, the school was a kindergarten through eighth grade school. It was just what I needed. Furthermore, when I went into a store, I was told by my family that I could not put my hands in my pockets because the store owners and workers might think I was stealing, and I would be in trouble. And the store was usually very cold because I was not accustomed to air conditioning. So that made it even more uncomfortable, since I could not put my hands in my pocket, at least try to keep myself warm. Now, additionally, the first movie theater I went to, I had to go outside after I got my ticket and then enter a side door that led upstairs because only whites were allowed to sit downstairs close to the screen. And it gets even better. When I was lucky enough to have money for an ice cream cone, I had to stand in the front of the drugstore by the cash register and order it. And I was not allowed to go down to where I could see what the selections were. I grew up thinking that ice cream only came in three flavors, vanilla, strawberry, and chocolate. So getting back to that school. In school, we never received new textbooks. We received all the used books from the white school whenever they received new textbooks. We spent the first week of the school year covering the outside of those books. And we used either brown paper bags or newspaper because the books were so worn. There was nothing we could do about the pages that had been ripped out. We just used the books that we were given. All of this was a normal life for a colored person living in the South under segregation during my childhood. Every major institution in the larger society, law enforcement, banks, major clothing stores, major grocers, and elected and appointed officials even, worked together to maintain the status quo of that society. Black children were taught how to cope with those conditions as a matter of survival. To get out of line was synonymous with putting your life on the line. As a child, you knew it was wrong, but who could you talk to that could do something about it? So the black community constantly looked for heroes that would periodically arise to rescue us, or at the very least give us some measure of relief. We didn't care if they were black or white as long as they defended our cause and helped to better our conditions. My guest today, Dr. Harry Blake, he didn't just experience this as a child, but he also endured some of it as an adult. Dr. Blake, what are some of your reflections about legal segregation in our society?
Let me preface that statement by saying we have more in common than you realize. You grew up in Northeast Louisiana. I spent 1940 to 1950 in Northeast Louisiana, in Tallulah, Louisiana, on a plantation. Mm-hmm. And you perhaps heard that story before, but that is the truth. Mm-hmm. My experiences were very similar to yours, because what went on in East Louisiana went on all over in Louisiana, went all over in the South. I can't speak for the North and other sections of America, but I remember the movie, also in Tallulah. You went to the blacks, found a way upstairs, mm-hmm. white sat downstairs. They didn't have Burger Kings then, but the people who sold hamburgers, you had to go to a window mm-hmm. on the outside
yes.
and order your hamburgers. It was not uncommon to be called a boy. Even my daddy was. There was something about the South that if you were black, you never got grown. You went from a boy to an uncle.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So I experienced that. And you mentioned that it was a matter of survival in your day and generations before you. I think we've done our young people a disservice. They really need to know how to survive in society today.
Yes, yes.
And it may be, I don't know if this is true or not, the Martin boy,
Trayvon Martin. Yes.
Maybe had he been taught survival skills, he would be alive today.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I appreciate that.
So the experiences were very similar.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Blake. Now, let's fast forward a little bit from going through those years to the turmoil of the civil rights movement. Now we're in the thick of it. Now people are building some momentum, and people are starting to stand up and lead groups into the streets, and we're going to protest this, we're going to boycott this. People like Dr. Blake met and strategized how to fight wrongly constituted civil institutions and laws. There were many of us who were afraid for our lives, as well as for those who decided to take a stand against the laws of segregation. We had been warned what would happen to troublemakers, and the truth of the matter is we even saw what happened to some of them. Many people died in that struggle whose names are never found in print anywhere, but nevertheless their stand for right helped get us beyond a legally segregated society to one where integration became the law of the land. Now, Dr. Blake, again, you were in the thick of it. You were part of the movement. What are some of your reflections and thoughts concerning the actual struggle to overcome legal segregation in our society?
Please also permit me to make this statement. The late Dr. T.J. Jemison, who just died recently, this week, whose funeral is going to be Saturday. Really, Dr. Jemison was, as I see it, the father of the modern day civil rights movement, because in the mid 50s he had successfully pulled off a bus boycott. And of course Martin King came later on to Baton Rouge to visit him to model his boycott in Montgomery. I've always seen things in society that didn't look right to me. And I always thought, what could I do to change those things? And back in March of 1960, Dr. King gave me an invitation to become a member of his staff. He had preached my commencement services in 1959 at Bishop College and connected with him. I had read what he was doing in Montgomery, kept up with it. I had noticed, though I lived on the plantation, I noticed people like him and other icons at that time and wanted to make a contribution like they made. And when I got hired on the staff at Dr. Simpkins' behest, I just expressed my resentment to the way people were treated and the laws that were made against us. I knew they were evil, and I was willing to die if necessary to bring about a change.
Well, it's sad enough those people willing to grant you your wish, and tried to do just that, and we thank God that they were not successful.
Yeah, well, they made one mistake. They hit me on the hardest part of my body.
Lord have mercy.
My head.
Oh. Amen. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is a conversation on race in America. My intent, again, is to provoke a conversation on topics about race and race relations in the United States. Please note that this broadcast is not promoting any political party or religious affiliation. The views expressed are mine and my guests here in the studio with me. I have in the studio with me, again, Dr. Harry Blake, a civil rights icon in our state and beyond. Also, I'd like to, again, acknowledge the sponsor of our program today, and that's the Whitfield Funeral Home, 3701 Hollywood Avenue, Shreveport, Louisiana, 71109. Their phone number is 318-631-0203. General Manager, Mrs. Ozell Woodson, and they say they celebrate life with dignity, affordably, and they have some packages you might be interested in. So, Pastor Blake, when we kind of take a look at what's happening today, we looked at legalized segregation, we looked at the struggle to overcome it and get into a society where integration became the law of the land. But when I look at where we are today, I see that people like me, we're getting old, and some are dying, and we were children back then. Who is going to tell the story when Dr. Blake's generation is gone and my generation is gone? I mean, today's black community includes a generation and a half who never experienced living in a legally segregated society. Many of them seem to take everything that happens at face value without analyzing or even considering that there may be ulterior motives lurking in the background. I'm not sure if many in my generation or older could ever reach the point where we would believe that all motives, even most political motives, appear. When we see movements in society that appear to be regressive and yet they have huge followings, it is our natural tendency or even instinct to look for less than pure motives. It's natural for my generation to evaluate such situations to see if this is something institutional, if this is an isolated case of individual bigotry. There are many thoughts that ramble through my mind when I hear someone say they're going to take back their country. I mean, I wasn't shipped over here from Africa. Neither did I cross an international border to get here. I was born and reared in the United States. This is the only country where I have held residency. And I don't ever intend to be okay with this country moving in a direction that appears to support institutional racism or any other regressive social agenda. Dr. Blake, again, what's your view concerning this?
What troubles me, I think, about America is we are the only people in America that the white man wants to take the country back from. I don't understand that at all. And we didn't voluntarily come here, as you said. We were brought here and have been treated less than human in many instances. Let me comment on this integration thing. I fought for integration, but the kind of integration we received in the schools is not what we were fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted equality.
Yes.
And the system took control of the schools and bussed us out of our communities
mm-hmm.
to their schools, and as you see now, our schools are being closed. There's something about the system that they're thinking far ahead so they can stay in control.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to be wise enough and analytical enough to see beneath the surface
mm-hmm.
and see what the real agenda is.
Yes, but and that's the challenge, because your generation and my generation, we are sensitized to it because we lived in a segregated society.
Yeah.
We know what institutional racism feel like. We know what it look like. We know what it act like. But today, because the heart of this conversation is today, we have a generation and a half that really never knew anything about segregation other than what they read in the book.
Sure.
So that's the challenge that is before us. You are a natural analyzer of these social movements. So am I. But there's a generation and a half that they don't even know how to analyze what they see. They don't know how to think about a tea party. They don't know how to think about an agenda that says, let's get rid of this tax structure and bring in this tax structure. They don't look for motives behind it that seek to move backwards against progress. We do, because we have a sensitivity that comes out of a living experience.
Well, I think we've got to use methods and means such as this broadcast, and we've got to talk, I guess have forums in our churches and in our communities to awaken, because there's always been a generation, even in my day, who were not sensitive to see what was going on. So you got to have people to interpret all along the way
Okay. What's
going on.
Okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. And let me say, I believe that one of the greatest, and I'll call it man-given tools that we have to support us in this effort to move forward and never go backwards is the right to vote. And, of course, I emphasize again, it's man-given. It's a part of a government created by man. I believe it would be instructive to examine the demographics of voters who are of black heritage. What percentage of registered voters from my generation actually exercises their right to vote? What percentage of registered voters from your generation, Dr. Blake, actually exercises their right to vote? And I believe that if anyone understands the importance of registering and voting, it should be my generation and it should be your generation who understand it. I mean, what's your thought about this? Because it's disturbing to see the pattern of black voting as it relates to issues, unless it's a hot button.
Well, I think you're correct about all of this, but there's something about us as a people. We are moved on emotional issues.
Mm-hmm.
If there's an emotional issue, we will go and vote. But we've got to some way keep prodding and prompting people to vote, because that's one of our most powerful instruments.
Yes.
In America. And even when we organize in large numbers and vote, the system has a way of changing the rules and dividing the demographics, so our vote is diluted in some kind of way. So we got to have people who are vigilant enough to see what's happening on the horizon, and then be prepared to counteract it. So the vote is very important.
And I will try to do my best to restate something you said, because I think it's so critical. And again, you see the result without seeing when it was actually done. But when you look at national elections and a Democratic platform wins by a landslide of popular votes, millions of voters. But yet, when you look at the House of Representatives, those people, those 500-some individuals that represent the voters,
yes.
Then the majority represent a platform that does not reflect the way people voted. So that would suggest somewhere between the individual vote and the person who gets elected to office, there is some gerrymandering going
yes,
on.
Yes. Yes.
To put in power someone who does not represent the views of the majority of people that would be going to the polls to vote. So you said it much nicer than I did, but I think we both see that there's an issue there.
It is an issue there, and we've got to not only be concerned about the presidential election, we've got to be concerned about the Senate and the representatives. Also, those people who represent us.
And every ordinance or resolution that comes to the poll,
sure,
we need to address.
Of course.
Let me say this, because you spoke to, but I do want to add my own, I guess, bit of clarity, and that is I am not in any fashion suggesting that integration solves the problems of a so-called free society. I mean, I have issues with some facets of how legal integration was implemented in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that'll be the focus of my broadcast in a couple of weeks. But when I look at the topic we're dealing with today, is revolving around some of the ills that existed in our society under legal segregation. And those ills promoted and protected institutional racism. Today we have a generation in our society who never experienced it. They are becoming a growing demographic of voters. Their ignorance of institutional racism makes them vulnerable to electing officials who have shown a propensity to want to turn back the hands of progress and return to an oppressive society. In a real sense, this new generation of young adults doesn't know how subtle the movements in the wrong direction can be, because there is a subtlety that takes place. And I'm not trying to paint a picture that is going to suggest that one day you are a CEO and the next day you're picking cotton for free. That's not what I'm saying. But there are movements in our society that are more subtle than that. For instance, when there are laws that are more lenient on the persons involved in importing illegal drugs into this country than the laws that determine the penalty for the guy on the street who sells low-grade rock at $5 a hit. I mean, that is subtle, but it is in the wrong direction. No country can win a war on drugs by locking up foot soldiers off the streets rather than taking down the cartel that that specializes in importing these drugs by the ton. I mean, if you cut off the supply of drugs, the foot soldiers in the neighborhoods will be out of business next month. And here is the irony when I look at this. This nation, the United States of America, found Osama bin Laden, who had the resources to literally hide anywhere in the world. But we can't manage to stop a handful of people who import tons of illegal drugs every year. And we already know the destination for those drugs. I mean, those are subtle movements in the wrong direction. The proof that the direction is wrong is that you end up with hundreds of thousands of young black men, 18 to 45 years old, in prison, and none of them own a boat or a plane that was used to supply the stuff they were arrested for selling. I mean, what do you think about that, Pastor?
I think you're eminently correct about that. In America, money talks. Money rules the situation. And there's a lot of money behind the drug system, the drug activities. And also, I don't know how we can make the connection here in this program, but there's money in the prison system.
Yes.
So there are people, there's some fat cats in high offices where the drugs are concerned, but there are also some fat cats when it comes to the prison system. And we, it's been appalling to me that we are always in a war. In your generation, you can hardly remember a 10-year period when there was not a war. War is profitable for America.
Yes.
So we just keep fighting. We let the drugs go on. We build a prison system so we can put the people who are handling the drugs illegally in.
Actually, I'm enjoying this, but, you know, our time is about up, and I want to thank Dr. Harry Blake, Vice President of the National Baptist Convention, USA Incorporated, pastor of the Mount Canaan Baptist Church of Shreveport, and again, an icon in the civil rights movement in the state of Louisiana and across the south of this country. He joined me today in this conversation on race in America, and I am appreciative of it. Stay tuned next week, same day, same time. We're going to rebroadcast the conversation from our first week. You can be president, but you cannot lead the country. Again, I want to thank the Winfield Funeral Home, 3701 Hollywood Avenue, Shreveport, Louisiana, 71109, 318-631-0203. General Manager, Mrs. Ozell G. Woodson, and they have some packages that they think will really get your attention because they say they are affordable, so they like to celebrate life with dignity and affordability. Certainly, we pray that God's richest blessing will be upon you and that you have a happy Thanksgiving. Be blessed.